My first question is, 37 years, you're doing this job, like your adult life, and you've come to the end of this road. How are you dealing with this, and how does this feel at this point?
So it's, I'll be, when I leave on the 30th, it'll be a month short of 37 years. I think I'm dealing with it gradually, or maybe like I've maybe dealt with a lot of things. When it happens, and then I'll deal with it. But, I have a lot of my friends are retired. Never a good time, as Bill Bratton said, but a right time. But there's a lot of different feelings. There's, I'm a little apprehensive. I'm happy. This is a good opportunity. There's a lot of sadness also. A lot of great friends, and not just in the police department, throughout, especially in this job and chief of department, made so many friends all throughout the five boroughs, and actually from people from around the world. We get a lot of visitors here in the NYPD from different countries and different states coming in here to take a look at what we're doing. So I'm going to miss that. And just being a cop, it's, 37 years, which is well more than half of my life. But, you got to move on at some point, I suppose.
Best day, worst day?
I don't think I've had this question asked a couple of times. I don't think I've had a best day. I think every day is a great day because I get to see what the men and women of this police department do each and every day, and the courage that's displayed, the generosity, the empathy, how they go about taking care of New Yorkers. I think that's the best part of this job. Obviously, the worst days were the line of duty deaths. There's been a number of them since I've been chief of department and police commissioner. I think that's a story that most people really don't know. If there's a line of duty death, if a police officer dies in the line of duty, it's in the paper for a couple of days, but then, we deal with the line of duty families forever. And we have a saying here that we never forget, and we have to make sure that we don't forget, because you got to think about this is a lifetime now. Their lives have changed dramatically. Brian Mulkeen's family, I've met with them a number of times. This is, Brian was a great young man, and now it's dad, Camille, dad Brian, and mom Camille, and brother and sister Aaron and Eric. This is something that they have to process now for the rest of their lives. So, and that's the case for every line of duty death. So I think maybe not the worst part, but probably the most difficult part of the job.
You're a people person. You liked being out and about in your various commands. So let's say a best day. I know you said there was really no best day, but is a best day being out there and seeing what people do, meeting and greeting?
Yeah, we just, yesterday I went up to the 4-4 precinct, which I think most people know is probably the best almost 2.5 years of my career. Then after that, we went to District 11, which I was there as a police officer from 84 to 86 and lieutenant from 90 to 92. So, it's not the same people. There's a couple of people that are still there. Deirdre from the 4-4 is still up there, but it's you get to see the human side of the people that wear the uniform, and they're great people. They do these jobs for the right reason. It's even if you're not wearing a uniform, there's so many great people, non-uniform people in this job that do a terrific job, because we couldn't do it without them. So this is, and then outside the job, the community members, the elected officials, there's great people in New York City, and that's what drives us forward.
You've been described as the architect of neighborhood policing. Bill Bratton wanted you as the successor because you were going to move that forward. You talk about its successes, but how do you quantify or measure the success, what difference it's made, and what do you think New Yorkers don't know about how it works?
Yeah, so I think the way to measure success, it's a crime-fighting strategy. Are we continuing to drive crime down? I know we're up slightly in homicides and shootings this year, but we're down in overall crime. That downward trend has been going on, since 1994. It's gotten even better with neighborhood policing, and it gives police officers the opportunity to meet the people they're sworn to protect and serve. It's not just the precinct commander, it's not just the community affairs cops, and the community affairs cops do a fantastic job. I know I wouldn't have had any success as a precinct commander without them. And now we have patrol cops, sector cops, that have the opportunity to go to meetings and meet the people and talk and identify the problems and solutions together. I think that's how we move forward as a city. And this came at the at a very necessary time after 2014, after Ferguson and Garner and Joe Liu and Rafael Ramos were murdered in December of 14. I knew we had to evolve. So did Carlos Gomez. So did Terry Monahan and Rodney Harrison and all the other executive staff. And I thank the men and women of the NYPD. They embraced the change. We moved forward. We're in every precinct, every PSA, every transit district. Is it perfect? No, not yet. But I'm not really sure what's perfect in New York City. You know, we do the best, and we try our best to keep the city safe. And I think the cops are doing a great job.
Stop and frisk obviously has been significantly reduced, and there is former Mayor Bloomberg apologizing for it. And I know you've described it as a necessary tool. What do you think about what he said, and how do you think it is a necessary tool for policing?
Yeah, so, it's not easy to apologize. It's not. I've done a couple of them myself in my time as police commissioner, so I respect Mayor Bloomberg for that. I've had the opportunity to meet him. I think he did a lot for the city, and that's what was in his heart, and he felt it necessary to do so. We're New Yorkers. We can either accept it or not accept it, or be neutral about it. But I think it was a good step for him. He did a lot of good things for New York City.
What about stop, question, and frisk? Police still do this today to a lesser degree. So what makes the distinction from then and now, and why is it an effective tool?
So everything that we've done, especially over the last 6 years, is we're concentrating on the people who are driving the crime, and it's a very small percentage of the population in New York. You don't need 600,000 street stops in New York City. I think last year the number was about 13,000. This year I think it's about the same. It's a constitutionally tested tool that police have to use, that you need to use to keep the people of the city safe, and quite frankly to keep them safe too. So it's something that we still employ. It helps us get weapons off the street. It helps keep the city safe, but it has to be used correctly, and obviously it has to be used constitutionally.
Now, I saw the op-ed piece that you wrote today in the Daily News about the DNA database. What are your concerns about the proposed legislation, and how effective of a crime-fighting tool is that?
DNA, there's a couple different databases. There's national, state, and local databases, and they're all important. And we're working with the city council to make sure that we continue to do it in a fair manner. But it's something that, it's not a new technology. It's been around since the 90s. There are people out there looking to do New Yorkers harm. They're looking to do members of the NYPD harm. And we have to use whatever technology that's available to make sure we do that. And when we do make an arrest, that there are consequences for that, too. So it's an important tool that we need to continue to use.
And what about this characterization that it's going rogue, or that it's being used not properly?
I certainly don't agree with that. I see what gets done here every day in the NYPD, and it's done fairly. It's done, as I said before, it's done constitutionally. Our job is to fight crime and keep people safe. This is a department full of people that are committed to keeping the people of the city safe. So, I disagree with that characterization wholeheartedly.
You were a transit cop for many years. You, in fact, said that was probably some of the most enjoyable years of your tenure on the department. Yet, we see that there are numbers that are on the rise. While the index crimes may be down, the New York Post was reporting statistically that a lot of these misdemeanor crimes are up sharply. First of all, why aren't they included in accounts when you do your monthly crime stats? And what do you attribute to this rise?
Yeah, so it's our reporting is consistent with the UCR Uniform Crime Reports. That's how crime is reported nationally. So whenever I speak and I talk about crime being up or down, I always say that it's the major seven crimes. Misdemeanor crimes, I think that some of them are on our comp stat sheet, which is publicly posted. Listen, the subway is an important part of New York culture. It's how people get around, and if people don't feel safe in the subway, that's an issue. And we just have to make sure that when we do our work in the subway, that it's directed at the people that are going to commit crime. There's also, you have to do fare evasion enforcement. It's important. It's, you know, most of the fare evasion enforcement that we're doing now, it's civil summonses, the tab summons. Sometimes there's criminal court summonses. And our arrests are way down. But if you have to control the entrance to the subway. This way people feel safe when they're on the subway. Because it's a different environment than walking on the street. There's nowhere to go. You're in a subway car. So we have to make sure we do our best to make people feel safe, not only be safe, but feel safe. You know, it's been characterized that we're going back to the 80s. You know, people who were saying that, I'm not sure if they were here in the 80s. We're not even close, but Chief De La Torre is doing a good job. We're deploying in the right places. We just have to make sure that we continue. It's crime, and we have to look at quality of life issues in the subway, too.
What about this pushback, people challenging the officers who were taking the Truro person into custody and saying, you know, hey, I don't have a Metro card and I can't pay the fare, so why is somebody giving me a hard time? Why are police officers giving me a hard time? How do you respond to that? How do officers respond to this? Is there like a sense of lawlessness that's out there? Is it a sense of we're going to disregard law enforcement?
No, I think these situations are, I don't think, I know that, social media is a big part of life in 2019. You know, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not so good, sometimes it's inconsequential, and we have to deal with that. You know, there's 6 million people a day that ride the subway, and out of that 6 million, I'd venture to say 99.99% of them are law-abiding, and that's the good thing. Now, are there going to be people that don't want to follow the rules? Yeah, and we have to make sure that we take steps. And it doesn't have to necessarily be a summons. It certainly doesn't have to be an arrest. But quality of life offenses need to be addressed in the subway. Fare evasion needs to be addressed in the subway. This way, everybody that rides that subway can get that sense of feeling safe. So it's important. I was a transit cop from 1983 till the merge in April of 1995. I know how important the New York City subway is to the heartbeat to the heart of New York City.
Do you worry about a perception that people are dissing police officers, or that they're, you know, even President Trump was saying, I don't like the fact that, you know, water is getting thrown on cops, and that there's a sort of level of disrespect?
So, as you know, I've been a cop for a long time. Most of the executive staff, you know, Terry Monahan, Rodney Harrison, Lori Pollack, we've all been cops. This is not something new, you know. And then in some ways, I'm glad that people are seeing this, because this, you know, not everybody has respect for the police. Most people do. The vast majority of the people do. But some people don't and never will. And it's good that people get to see that. But, you know, we're the police. We're not victims. And I said that over the summer. If something happens and there's a violation or a law is broken, we'll take care of it. So it's important that people don't look at the NYPD and feel sorry for us. That's not what we want. All right. This is a very difficult job. The cops do a great job, and they become police officers for the right reasons. They want to make a difference. They want to do good. They want to keep people safe. So we need the support of people in New York City. And that's what neighborhood policing is all about. It's about building trust between the community and the police and the community. This is where we need to continue to head. And I know Dermot Shea is, I've known him for a long time. He's more than a capable person. He's going to do a fantastic job as police commissioner, chief of crime strategies. He was a precinct commander. He was actually also the CEO of the 4-4. Chief of detectives now, because great relationships out in the community. His time as chief of crime strategies is going to help us get through all the criminal justice reforms. So New York's going to continue to go in a good direction.
What about those? I know there's been discussion here, and you know, several news conferences, you're planning on dealing with these criminal justice reforms that are taking place starting in January. What are the concerns, and how are you going to address them, whether it's witnesses, you know, whether there's an issue with cooperation, whether somebody's back out on the street, whether it's, handing over evidence, whether it's judicial hands being tied.
So there's, I think most New Yorkers realize by now that there was a number of criminal justice reforms that were passed into law and go into effect on January 1st, 2020. And we've done a tremendous amount of reform within the New York City Police Department, some voluntary, some not voluntary, which is, you know, if we don't evolve, we can't do our best keeping people safe. And I'm an optimistic person by nature. I always have been. I am concerned about January 1st, and I think everybody in New York needs to pay attention. You know, we've come a long way in crime. You know, 1990, there were 2,245 homicides. Last year, there was under 300. We're up, I think as of this morning, we're up 15. But that's still a homicide rate of 3.4 per 100,000. In 1990, it was 30 per 100,000. And how did we get there? A lot of hard work, a lot of sacrifice. And it's not just work done by the NYPD. We have great partners. The prosecutors are great. Our federal partners are great, too. But we've gotten to where we are by concentrating our resources on the people involved in violence and crime. And we have to make sure that when our cops put themselves at risk and make an arrest, that there are consequences. And you know, the bail reform I'm concerned about. But again, we're a resilient organization. And I think everybody in New York is going to be paying attention. And if they see that crime rate start to rise, even incrementally, no one's going to put up with it. And I think the elected officials are going to pay attention to it, too. So, you know, if come January 1st, if things aren't looking too good, I'm sure the people will be able to pivot and make sure that the whole system can keep people safe and be fair.
But sometimes, you know, turning the bus takes a long time. You know, it's a slow process. Are you concerned that this might get out of hand before people start realizing, you know, like there were a gazillion Ubers on the street before city officials began to realize that it was clogging streets and causing a lot of congestion? Do you worry that this is too slow a process if there's a spike, or that there's quality of life issues that are out there that are problematic?
I think we're a city agency that is able to react quickly. I mean, we pay attention to every crime. I get notified about every homicide and every shooting, every home invasion, a number of other crimes on my phone. I look at it, I don't know, probably way too many times, probably hundreds of times each day. So this is something that we pay attention to. And as we go through the new year, I know Dermot pays attention to it now. And come December 1st, he's going to be paying attention to it even more. And come January 1st, you know, Lori, Dermot, and Rodney, and everybody in the executive staff, this is we'll all be paying attention to it, as will the precinct commanders. And, you know, we'll be letting people know how we're doing, because there's a human cost to this. People can't forget that. This is not, you know, this is not just some theoretical thing here. This is, there's, you know, the safety in New York is paramount to the vitality of New York City, and we have to make sure we do our best to keep the city as safe as possible.
Finally, what do you see down the road for policing? What maybe piece of technology or advancement would you like to see put in place here, or would you think would really help the city or help New Yorkers?
So I'm a technology person. I've had a cell phone since 1996. I think the first computer I had was way back in 1985 or 1986. Technology is important, but I think more important than technology is to have a police department that has a real connection to the community, and that we have police officers that represent the community. And we are a majority-minority police department. We're a very diverse police department. I think as long as we have police officers that can communicate with the people that we're sworn to protect and serve, we're heading in the right direction. And that's where I see the future. I think police officers can also help in other ways, too. Our neighborhood coordination officers, they're not just involved in crime now. It's, you know, if somebody needs something from another agency, we can be the conduit for that to make that happen. And I think that helps us, too. It builds up trust with people if they can come to the police, and if there's an issue and we can help them resolve that beyond crime, I think that's a real positive step.
And what you'll miss the most?
I'll miss the people. I'll miss everything. I'll miss everything about this. Maybe one thing I won't miss, and I've spoken about this, this is a job. I know Bill Bratton and Ray Kelly and all my predecessors have felt this way also. It's you're consumed by it. You think about it. This is all you think about, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you know, all year long. That's all you think about. And it's not, you know, you're not worried about everything, but there's just so many different things going on, and you want to make sure that you don't miss anything, and you do your best for the department, and you do your best for the city. Am I going to miss that? I probably will. But I think health-wise, maybe to take it down a couple notches might not be a bad thing.
Well, congratulations and good luck to you.
Thanks, Juliet. Thanks.